Now I'm recording only after I've spilled my friend's deepest and darkest secrets.
On this episode of Fancy Ramen, at 67, May 20th, 2018. Hello, everybody.
Hello, Neil. I'm Scott.
I'm Cookie.
And I'm Lizzie.
And that's Ollie. Scott, yeah, you can't see Ollie because you, you're not here with us, but...
But I feel his warming presence.
Aww.
I like your guys' dog a lot. He is a very sweet dog.
Aww.
He is a good dog.
Good. Oh, he's sniffing the mic. He's saying hello. Oh.
No, Ollie, bad. I've changed my entire opinion about your dog.
Good. As everyone should.
So how's everybody doing? Any exciting things happen this week that are not video game related?
I think we should let Lizzie go first since she's a only periodic regular.
We have a new couch. That's exciting.
Oh, it is new.
Yeah.
Didn't even notice.
Yep. You should sit in it when you get a chance. It's very comfortable. It's like
Berkshire Hathaway sales, huh?
Yes. Mm-hmm. What else has been going on? My cousin had her baby shower. Yay.
So my question is, how do they shower the baby before it's even been birthed? Yeah.
I know. We don't know if it's a boy or a girl yet either. So.
Are they keeping it a secret till birth?
They don't even know.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it'll be a
gender
surprise.
Necessary for showering a baby?
No, not at all.
Not in this world,
Scott. I
think it's
more fun.
Well, but I mean, like, it does make it a little more useful if you have guests that want to give gender-specific clothing, right?
Hey, boys can wear dresses.
Exactly.
Absolutely. What's the most... Okay, I actually do want to ask this question very quickly. It's off-tangent, but it's going to be fun anyway. What's the most gender-neutral color that's not obviously, like, a completely neutral color, i.e. white, black, or some sort of... earth tone of that, like
you mean yellow?
I think people try to make it be yellow.
Yeah. It's either like yellow or brown.
Yeah. Or gray. There's a lot of gray.
I think gray's fine. Yellow is like a color I try not to wear. I don't know.
Because you want everyone to know you're a boy, you and your blue shirt.
I do have gray on though. I'm being gender ambiguous only on the lower layer.
Oh, and that reminds me, I should be recording video right now, so you can see my gray shirt.
I'm sorry, my shirt is white, and I'm wearing a purple cardigan.
It's also inside out,
yeah,
is it not?
Yeah, I was just going to say.
Correct. Because that's how the cool kids are doing it nowadays. Trendsetter.
It's completely intentional, of course.
I just wear black all the time. I don't know. It's just my color.
That's Sierra's approach. I don't know if she has colored clothing. I think we've even brought this up on the podcast before. My girlfriend has goth chic, whether she wants to admit it or not.
Nice. I actually went out and purposely bought some colorful shirts for work because people make fun of me at my work.
Isn't black like the ultimate professional color?
Right?
Though?
I mean, come
it
on.
Is. I have three black shirts that are the exact same shirt that I wear for work. So it's like 4 out of the 5 days that I work, or 3 out of the 4 days that I work, depending on the week. I'm wearing a black shirt.
Nice.
Well, that was exciting.
Yeah, sorry.
What have you guys been watching?
So we watched, obviously Steven Universe, but we can't talk about that because Scott's not caught up.
I am catching up, though. I only have, like, 6 episodes, I think,
you need to
left
hurry
to go
up.
Or something like that.
Oh, my God. You only have 6 episodes left to go?
Yeah, I'm doing what I can.
You need to watch those ASAP because craziness happens.
Very much so.
Okay.
It's so good. So
I'm going to try and get some more done today. So I will let you guys know as soon as I'm caught up.
Does it turn out Lapis Lazuli's head was in the box the whole time? Is that a character?
Lapis Lazuli.
It is, but what's the head in
is
the box reference?
It? Oh. Well, I can't say the movie, otherwise it's a spoiler for like a 15-year-old movie now.
Oh, okay.
But you haven't heard the reference, like, what's in the box? You is it You Can't Handle the Truth? What's in the box?
Oh, is there a head in the box?
That's a trial thing. Yeah. Yeah. A Few Good Men?
No,
is
it's...
Is that what it is?
13 Monkeys?
No, that's a good movie, but that's
12 Angry Men? We're just going to go down in a Christmas Carol.
Two Angry Men? What's in the box? Ocean's 12 Seven. Angry Men. Seven is the movie.
12 Angry Men.
I've
with Morgan Freeman and Brad Pitt.
And a box. Don't forget the box.
And a box and a head. Okay.
Gwyneth Paltrow's. Paltrow? Is that her name?
Yeah, it's Paltrow? Gwyneth Paltrow. Paltrow. Yeah.
Her head's in the box.
Anyway, getting back onto tangent, maybe.
Yeah, Steven Universe.
On track.
Steven Universe. I've also been watching Handmaid's Tale, which is still phenomenal. Super good. But I've heard that, and I still need to read the book, but I've heard that now it's not following the book. It's kind of doing its own thing.
It's pulling
That's
Game
actually
of Thrones.
Good to know as someone who's read the book and been told to watch it. It's like, I already know how it's going to go.
Yeah, it's doing its own thing, but honestly, I still love it. I mean, I don't see any issues with it as of yet, but
there's room within the book for the plot to deviate quite a bit, or I guess be further illuminated without actually like maybe spoiling what could still be a final conclusion or something.
Nice. I still
You've interested me
it.
In this. You're like the third or fourth person to recommend it.
It's so good. I look forward to it every week.
Yeah, I had my coworker and her roommate recommend it to me, and they're like, oh my gosh, it's so good. You'd really enjoy it. And I was like, oh really? Is it as good as the book? And they're like, oh, you read the book. Okay, well, whatever.
Oh, I'm sorry that we're dealing with Mr. Pompous, pretentious book reader over
it's
here.
It's like, I'm sorry, I read books.
Well, my mom's read the book, and she loves both of them. She loves the show and the book, so... Yeah. I think I get that vibe from a lot of people that they like both, which is cool. Rare, you know, but
I'll make sure to put it on my list.
Watch
Mike Pence's Wet Dream sometime later.
Oh, God.
Today.
I thought the joke was Mike Pence might be gay.
Well, that's a given.
Is Handmaid's Tale, excuse me.
No, he's just weird. Like, what does he call his wife?
Mother.
Like mother or something. Yeah.
Wait,
so basically,
wait. Really?
Okay. Like he's very like
he won't
prude.
Eat, he
like
won't,
he doesn't
spend time with other women if it like he won't go out on a business dinner with another woman without his wife present or something.
Right. And that's kind of what this society is like you can't like women.
It's chaperoning women. It's
right.
Like I mean there's a lot to be said about it. We could do a huge critical analysis. And honestly, if I end up watching the whole show and we all love it, we could even do an episode on it. Because Fancy Ramen is an amorphous blob of like media discussion.
Yes.
So you're telling me it's what could happen in the year 2020 should things go real wrong.
2020.
Actually, yeah. I mean, absolutely.
That's 2 years away.
Yeah.
Scary. But, you know, I heard that Texas shooter... The guy who shot up the school in Texas, supposedly he did it because this girl turned him down.
Best reason to shoot up a school.
I mean, you're guaranteeing yourself tail for the rest of your life at that point. Or you're giving your tail to someone? I'm not sure. It's a prison joke.
Yep.
Anyway.
Man.
I've been
watching. Screwed.
I know.
The world's a sad, dark place, and our media reflects that right now.
Yeah. On a lighter note, I've also been watching Better Call Saul, which is like the.
Prequel.
Kind of prequel, but some of it is kind of intermixed. I just found out in the latest episode, but it's kind of the prequel of Breaking Bad. It's actually pretty decent. And then Cookie and I watched this pervy anime called, I don't even know how to say that first word, A Boring World Where the Concept of Dirty Jokes Doesn't Exist. And it's hilarious. I don't know. I think I like animes that the girls are the pervs because it's, I don't know. I guess me and a couple of my friends used to be kind of pervy. Back in the day.
Used
so,
to
like,
be? Like, do you grow out of it?
Well, The fact that I find these animes so hilarious probably means I haven't grown out of it, but...
And the first word she didn't want to pronounce was Shimonita. A boring world where the concept of dirty jokes doesn't exist. It's an anime about a morally incorrupted Japan where people wear like collars and wristbands that pretty much act as like cell phones and the way the society gets their media. And these bands actually monitor what people say and do. So that way they can't like draw a penis or they can't They can't say any kind of bad words. Otherwise the police will come and arrest them and make them do hard time on the severity.
So it's
of the
a
bad
world
word.
In which all these things exist, but they're just heavily censored or like regulated against.
They exist in a black market capacity.
Right. Like they burned a lot of like porn mags and all that stuff.
All physical media, basically.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. Like one of the characters, since you can't draw like dirty things with your hand, she like draws it with her mouth. You said collar, I thought like pervy things when you said, I don't know why.
Wow. Wait. So they're pretty crude devices because if you can draw something using your mouth, like the collars are not actually picking up like
movement.
Thought processes, but rather they're picking up vibrations.
So
from
it's,
speech.
So basically it's based around the high school with the highest morality where a transfer student, a boy comes in and he's from the lowest morality school. So he basically knows the concept of biology, but everyone at this school doesn't. So like there are rumors going around, like, you know, if a boy wears ladies' undergarments, his cucumber becomes lady parts.
Like they don't know anything about sex.
Right. Yeah.
So they're like clueless and they're trying to figure out what it's about. And then this girl's like secret mission is to teach everyone what sex is.
Basically bring back dirty jokes and teach everyone how perverted society is actually supposed to be. So they're not clueless as they grow up to adulthood.
So it's a comedy.
Yeah. Yes. Oh yeah.
Very big comedy. Like one of the test questions that was asked is how are babies made? And it's like, when a man and a woman fall in love, they hold each other's hands approximately one balloon length apart. And that's like as far as they get into like the explanation of how a baby's made. It's like, yeah.
It's interesting.
Lots of body melding flies. And after the students start becoming awakened sexually, they kind of don't know how to deal with things. So it gets really out of hand real fast.
So do the collars and wristbands actually have a way to keep them from doing lewd things?
No.
Okay, that's interesting.
But they,
all right.
But they were trying. So this one gal in the government was trying to pass basically like a chastity belt thing so that they couldn't actually do anything.
To where they could actually control and like know exactly what a person's doing. So the girl who, as soon as she found out about like what sex actually is, she starts making like these, she makes a comic book that is a yaoi of the main character and this gorilla looking character, dude. And it becomes super popular among the school students.
Super popular.
Among all the female students. But like, so as she's finding like more dirty things to draw, she is quite literally just moving her head furiously while pumping out pages and pages.
Because she's drawing with her mouth.
Yes. Because she can't draw anything with her hands. Otherwise, the sensor in her wrist will track that and she'll be arrested.
But it was so funny because people are so unfamiliar with the concept of perverted things, like they don't even recognize what they are. And that's why they get this main character guy to like help them, because he's like, well, you would know what's perverted. So you're going to help us figure out what we can, you know, get rid of out of our school.
Like there are lewd pictures hiding around the school and that students are finding. And it's like right behind the girl. One of the main character girls who doesn't know what lewdness is, there's a picture of a farmhand woman holding a mushroom between her boobs about to take a bite, basically. And she frames it to add a little more class. And he's like, yeah, we should probably burn that. She's like, I don't see what's so wrong with a field maid about to enjoy a mushroom. I don't understand why she's not holding it with her hands, but I thought it looks nice. It's
pretty funny.
It starts off very innocent. And then quickly does not. But yeah,
that was pretty funny.
Besides that, things that we've been doing not outside of video gaming work, basically.
Have you talked about that Gary show, Gary's Demons or whatever?
Oh yeah, Gary and his Demons also.
That's hilarious.
It is a cartoon about a bureaucratic society. No, not bureaucratic society. Like a government agency that hunts demons, and one guy is trying to retire, but then cannot retire, and his adventures of being a high school dropout in his 40s or 50s.
Yeah.
Trying to retire and dealing with society and life and woes. Gary and his Demons. If you ever get a chance to check it out, definitely don't want to give anything away, but it's amazeballs.
But yeah. It's pretty funny.
Yeah. That's pretty much all we've been doing. Oh, I guess we got Sonar, a board game.
Oh, yeah.
That is Advanced Battleship.
Pretty much.
Also, it's the second version of the game, Captain Sonar. So this one's a pared down version just for four players, where it's only one ship. And the captain says which way the ship moves. And the other team's operator basically tries to chart where the submarine is. So that way they can shoot the other submarine two times.
Interesting. That's pretty cool because
I like that idea a lot better than Battleship.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Battleship in its concept doesn't make sense to me because it's just like,
I am floating my destroyer in the middle of the ocean and I refuse to move it as I'm being bombed by artillery.
And it's in a world where you have like battleships, carriers, etc. And like sonar or radar doesn't exist. Like you can't send a scout over it. I don't know. I understand like that's just the aesthetic of the game, but
I absolutely agree. Bombing random quadrants seems really stupid and just weird with the technological advancements to have ships but not have visibility.
Yeah, it's a fun game.
But yeah, besides that, that's pretty much been our week. How about you, Scott?
I haven't been up to too much. I like I said, I've been trying to catch up on Steven Universe at your guys's I guess request. And so I'm working on that. Went out yesterday and just kind of enjoyed hanging out around town with Sierra and hit up a sale at REI, which I think I had brought up before we started recording. It's really sad that Omaha doesn't have one, but I also understand why, because there's not much to do outside of the city. But yeah, I just got some gear for hiking and camping, which I'll be doing a bit of camping this upcoming weekend that I'm looking forward to.
Nice.
Man, I don't know if I did much else. We had our first anniversary party at my work, and so that was quite a bit of fun. We had a super cool band. We had a couple bands playing, but we had a band playing for the final act, and their bassist had the coolest bass guitar I've ever seen. It was the body of the bass guitar was the state of Montana. So... Nice. Roughly a rectangle near the... Well, no, it's not Wyoming, okay? We're not Wyoming or Colorado or, you know, Utah with its little hat. But it was essentially the rectangular portion near where the neck starts towards the head of the guitar. And then the jagged Rocky Mountain range that we have on our side of the state. Near the bottom of it. And not only was this dude's bass guitar cool, he was like a really, really excellent bassist. So that was a lot of fun.
Nice.
Yeah, I haven't done anything like super worth discussing though.
Wait, are you guys married?
Oh, Sierra and I? No. No.
Oh.
Anniversary cookie, you meant for calls, work, right?
Yeah, for work.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Cookie calls Sierra my wife anyway.
But I was about to say, if you were in this D&D game, you would know.
Oh shit, talking about marriage. No, I do have something super cool and exciting. December of next year, I have a wedding I'll be going to.
Yours?
Nope. No, it will be Sierra's cousin, and we're going, and it's going to be on a palace in the middle of a lake southeast of Udaipur, India. And so I am hyped for this wedding.
Wow.
Because we'll go to India and then we'll go visit one of Sierra's mother's old grad students in Nepal. So I'm going to have a good like Southern Asia tour next year and I'm hyped about it. I'm so excited. Nice.
Do you like Indian food?
Oh, Indian food's one of my favorites. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So nice. Even more excited for that.
Awesome. Neil?
What about you, Neil? What are you going to do?
I was in Pennsylvania for most of the week. And
work-related?
Yeah, work-related. I tried reading 1984 on my phone going to Pennsylvania, and I got a couple chapters in and was like, this is getting too real. And I immediately stopped reading 1984.
What's that book about again?
As soon as you... it's about essentially... like a fascist state monitoring its civilians in all possible capacities with the technology imagined at the time.
Wow.
It's the reference to Big Brother that everyone makes as well.
Big Brother is the figurehead or demagogue of, I don't remember what the name of his nation is. Is it Oceania that the protagonist exists in?
That's one of the nations. I don't know if it's that one though.
It is way too real. It has a huge reliance upon fake news. Like the protagonist works at a fake news organization creating propaganda every single day. It is an essential literary read, but also if you finish it, like the immediate next book you need to read is Brave New World by Aldous Huxley, which is like the dystopian novel Huxley wrote in response to 1984. Yeah.
There
which is written by Orwell, I think.
So I've read 1984 before, and I just picked it up because I had heard that the epilogue to 1984, which is apparently not included in several versions or publications of 1984, is actually kind of uplifting and optimistic compared to the proper end of the book, which basically
the proper end is fucking dark.
Yeah, the main character as it, who's named
it's Winston, I believe.
Yeah, John Winston? No,
I don't remember his first name.
They chose that name in particular because as a reference to Winston Churchill's name, Winston Smith, and they use Smith because Smith is like an everyman name. So
he is the proletariat.
Yeah, they pretty much make this character out to be someone that might understand that things are really not what they seem. And he's also in a position that allows him to have that insight of like, well, my job is basically falsifying things to begin with. Not that he ever thinks that way. But by the end of the book, it basically ends with him in tears proclaiming his love for Big Brother. And
so he is able to avoid getting his face chewed off by rats.
Rat.
And he sells out his one true love. Not one true love. He sells out another person that he has fostered like a very strong connection with at the tip of a hat for his own, you know, personal safety. It is truly one of the darkest novels you can probably read, especially in today's. Go ahead, Neil.
Well, and the epilogue, which I did not get to because I literally stopped for all of the horrible reasons and like similarities I see between America and the novel, is supposed to be something that kind of implies that the society has collapsed since then. But the other thing that I kind of wanted to draw some attention to is that it the novel centers around the idea that intelligence or knowledge is power, mm-hmm. and what this is, what the fascist state does is basically enables.
They control information.
Yeah,
that is their most powerful tool.
One of the themes that comes up is the idea that 2 + 2 = 5. And like, while we don't necessarily have anything like that today, we are so willing to accept falsehoods for mm-hmm. what they are as truth. I mean, and I don't want to turn this into a political show, but it's just like, how the fuck are we still arguing about climate control and global warming this day and age? And it's because we're fucking idiots. That's why we're so willing to let like a dictator basically tell us what is happening. And that depressed the fuck out of me.
Right. Well, I think part of the problem with global warming and people not wanting to accept it is then we have to change our lives, you know, and people are unwilling to actually do that, you know, because we would have to give up some of our privileges or luxuries, you know, that type of thing. And I don't think people want to do that. So.
And industries are people.
Yeah, and, true.
And those quote unquote people don't want to do that either.
Yes. Yeah. They're probably one of the biggest pushers of that. But
so, aside from doing that, I ended up playing a few things in Pennsylvania, and I'm trying to think of something that's not game related while I was there. Oh, I started watching Westworld season 2. I don't know if you guys ever watched the first season.
The second season, I saw a preview and it looks weird.
Yeah, because it's completely different. Like the mysteries are more or less solved, and like one defining moment, this is a spoiler for Westworld season 2, is that oh God, I can't even think of his name now. The director that gets shot at the end of Westworld season 1, old guy played by that really good actor, Hannibal Lecter. He, as a boy, that boy host he has, ends up talking to Ed Helms' character, the man in black, or William. And again, this is so early on, I don't feel bad telling you guys in case you start watching it. He's talking up his whole game and the whole thing that he's doing now and what's going to happen. And I only barely kind of heard this well because I was on a plane and, you know, headphones and stuff. I didn't get the entire picture. But at the end of the speech, Ed Helm just turns around and shoots the boy in the head as he's walking away. And I feel like that's a thematic change in the story that, mm-hmm. you know, this person that was more or less the mastermind, the manipulator, and may still be in season 1, is taken out of the picture completely in season 2.
Right.
So,
it looked really different. At least a preview, it seemed to me like they were more like, yeah, let's go kill people. I don't know. It just seemed more, I don't know how to explain it.
It's a very violent and crazy act happens at the end of season 1. So, like, you have to expect that season 2 is going to be completely different. But it didn't grab me in a way that made me want to keep watching it, because it doesn't seem like there's mysteries, like there are these veiled things going on in the background right now that the first season seemed to do pretty well. But while I was there, I did play some video games. Do you mind if I jump into this real quick?
Yeah,
jump.
Let's move on.
The first game I played, and I'll be very quick with it, was Dragon Force, a Sega Saturn game on my mobile phone, using an emulator. And I just wanted to point out, like, it's crazy what you can do with a phone now playing Saturn games, which are actually pretty hard to emulate on computers to begin with, because the Saturn is kind of weird hardware. Old RPG, nothing more to say about that. But it's cool that, like, my phone can do this now. Like, I feel like I'm finally starting to utilize, like, what a smartphone can do in a full capacity. It's something, like, I've really never tried to do before. But along with that, I played something that Scott played as well. And before we talk too much into it, I wanted to ask you, Cookie, if you were interested in the Red Strings Club and playing it for yourself.
50-50. Like, after last week's episode, just due to the fact that I couldn't find my wallet to pay the, like, $7 it was for both games.
Right.
I did not end up buying it, so I'm not sure if it's on sale anymore still.
Yeah, I'm not sure either.
So
it is one that I would dedicate to your wish list if you haven't already, though.
Okay. It's on my wish list. So you can totally spoil it.
It's on my wish list, but you can spoil it.
Go for it.
I don't want to spoil it for exclusively the reason that you may play it.
Well, then, here, let's do this.
What kind of game is it?
It's, so Neil had a bartender simulator that he really liked a while ago. This is Scott's bartender simulator that he really liked.
And pottery simulator.
And pottery simulator. Ah. It looks and sounds super duper interesting. Call me when you're done talking about it.
And analogs. Phone line simulator. No, I mean, this episode's going to go long anyway, so we can just skip the
spoilers.
I think
we can go without spoiling it. Yeah.
Okay.
I figure if we just tackle this together, Scott, it'd probably be best.
Okay.
Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, we both finished it. I had very little left to say because now with the hindsight of completing it, I realized that I think I was almost done with Act 2 or completely done with Act 2 of 3 acts. And so my feelings and opinions about the game haven't changed, besides probably been further reinforced that it is an exceptional game and a really great narrative. And the one thing that I really enjoyed about it that I don't encounter in a lot of other indie games is that each act, and Neil, you can maybe say more on this, is a very distinct like game mechanic. You're doing the same kind of like critical, moral, and ethical thinking in each segment, but in how you do it, you have a slightly different like mini gamer method in order to access that. And so in the first one, it is pottery, and I'll keep these very vague for the benefit of people who will want to play the game. The second is bartending, which is my favorite portion of the game. And then the third is doing some prank calling. So
yeah, it's a prank caller simulator. That's
yeah, it's what a prank it is. Caller simulator, pottery simulator, bartending simulator, and it does all three of those really well. There are a couple of things that they do that make the prank calling especially enjoyable. If you have a numpad on the right hand side of your keyboard, you can punch it in just like dialing a phone, which is really nice. And I kept forgetting to look to see if the pixel art actually has your character that you're playing. I believe it is, oh man, it's Donovan, I believe.
The one on the phone is Brandeis, or I don't know how to pronounce
Brandeis
it.
Brandeis is the bartender.
No, Donovan's the bartender. Brandeis is the,
Brandeis is the phone caller. Okay.
Yeah, that's the best label to give him without giving anything away.
Yeah, I didn't check to see if he actually typed it out when you typed it out, but it feels very phone-like. Like, they do a really good job of making what is, you know, like, a very graphically limited game and, like, mechanically limited, as in the controls that you execute, feel very immersive nonetheless. And so, Cookie, I really, really would love it if you played this game, and it's going to go on sale again sometime in the future, and you'll just have to pick it up and burn a couple hours on it. It's very short, too. I was actually a little disappointed with how short it was just because I wanted more.
Yeah.
But I think that's a really good indicator of a good game when you complete it and you go, but I was so into it. All right, Neil, I've said my piece, and I'll hop in if I have anything else to say, but you have quite a bit more that I think you can add, so I'm going to let you hit the floor.
Well, I do want to start by saying that it's the team that made this has only made one other game so far, at least as a team. Individual members might have played other things, but they made a game called Gods Will Be Watching, and there are a lot of similarities between the two. Scott, you've played that as we talked about last week, right?
Yes, and actually there was one last thing. There is an Easter egg for anybody who's played Gods Will Be Watching, in which you have an opportunity to interact with a character that is a torturer, and or who performs torture. I guess that is a torturer. And he uses...
I'm a human before I'm a torturer, okay?
He uses the same dialogue in an interaction that a torturer in the second chapter of Gods Will Be Watching uses, which is, I'll kill your friends, I'll kill your family, I'll kill your pets, then I'll burn your pets' clothes. And I think it's supposed to be a joke, but It's just, it's one of those weird details that I just happened to notice because I went back and played a little bit of Gods Will Be Watching after finishing the Red Strings Club. And
Did you finish it?
No, I'm not done yet, but I'm working on it again. So that's the best I can, that's the best I can do right now, is making progress on the things you guys want me to do.
Well, and so with that in mind, as you're playing it, I've particularly noticed, because Gods Will Be Watching, I think, is always going to have like a place in my heart for just some of the uniqueness and in its storytelling and the lack of gameplay, if you want to call it that. It's more like menu navigation, if anything. But it's better in almost every way. It uses better ideas. It's a more playable experience. It feels more game-like. The Red Strings Club, that is.
The Red Strings Club.
The writing is better, and the translation is much better, because there are some points in time where, and Gods Will Be Watching, where this, the localization or translation from, I think they're Spanish, actually. The development team is in Spain. I could be wrong. But there are some points where the English script feels a little off or weird in Gods Will Be Watching. I don't think there's a problem with that at all in the Red Strings Club. I could be wrong.
I didn't encounter anything that didn't seem like it was written out by not only
native speakers,
an English
basically.
Speaker,
yeah,
but a very good speaker / writer, I guess.
The only issue I had with that crossed both games is it kind of felt like there were some rushed or unpolished ideas or points in that game, in both games, I mean. And I like kind of the same with you. At the end of the day, I sort of felt like they could have done more in terms of content. Like the pottery part, let's be honest, is kind of boring once you finish your first set of pottery vases, I guess. But
implants.
Yeah, I mean, thanks for going into spoilers, Scott. No, it's fine, because there's like no context of understanding what the hell we're talking about.
Absolutely.
So the pottery part's fine. It's like once you get done with the pottery, you never want to go back to it. But the bartending portion is actually really fun, and I wish there was more involved, more guests that you need to serve. And I kind of wish that instead of just telling you what everyone's emotions are, it made you work harder at
to search for emotions.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, do you know about Pink Tequila?
I do know about Pink Tequila.
Okay. Because that was like the only point in the game where I felt like I had gone above and beyond with a drink. Whereas in Valhalla, which is a game all about bartending, the bartending felt like more specialized. You were told to like make drinks that would accomplish certain things, like I want a drink that's sweet and not sour or something. So you would go through your list of drinks and think, well, I don't think they'd like this sweet drink, but I bet they'd like this sweet drink, or that sort of thing. But as a whole, like the story is fantastic. Without giving out spoilers, you start the game knowing exactly what's going to happen at the end. And as you play through the game, you get a visualization of your progress through a thread of red string, or multiple threads. So you see the ending, in which it tells you what's going to happen, and you have the start of this thread go across. And as it weaves in different directions, you see what may have happened if you had done something differently or like missed opportunities.
Oh, wow.
But it's kind of heartbreaking when you get to that final point, because the menu actually opens up and shows you the thread as you go through the game. And when you get to the last thread in the game, it says exactly what you're holding your breath for.
Oh my gosh.
And, I don't know. It's kind of heartbreaking for me at the same time. It's not a happy ending, but in a way it is. I guess it's almost bittersweet depending on how you play out the ending.
I'm wondering if there's a way I could find out how you played out the ending, because there seems to be like two very like polar dialogue options, I would say. You're given two choices between dialogue in unless there's something I'm not aware of.
No, I think you're asking me what is the last thing you say, right? And
yeah,
I just want to
know if you were being heartfelt or informative.
I was being heartfelt because, let's be real, maybe ignorance is bliss, and that, you know, it's the one time these two characters get to finally show the affection they share for each other.
Okay, I like to hear that a lot. I made the exact same decision, I'm going to assume.
Yeah.
Well, then it turns out I'm going to be informative.
You might be. That might be your personality. It was a point where I had to think like a good 2 seconds about like, oh shit, what do I do? And
yeah,
then
the
I
way
chose
that
to
that,
follow the heart.
The way that that final scene is essentially set also seems to, like, it implies some urgency to every choice. And I actually feel that way about the whole game. One of the things I really enjoyed about the dialogue is I felt a sense of urgency in every selection I made. I didn't wait and sit and think and mull over, like, what I was going to do. I tried to make decisions within a 5-second span. And if it was really complex, wait, like, 10 seconds. So at that very ending portion, you know, there is a point where I'm pausing and I'm just like, realistically, I shouldn't have this amount of time to make this option. And I'm glad I have it as a player.
Yeah.
But as a, I guess, as a more immersive element, they could have found a way to like truncate that. There are plenty of games that when you're provided with 2 options or even more, they give you like a little bar that's essentially depleting before it makes a random decision or a canon decision or whatever that is. And I think that that could have been utilized. And even though it wasn't, I'm still very happy with the game. And I don't think it was a necessary element, but I definitely considered its implementation in the game at points in time.
Well, so going from a game that truly does make you feel like immersed with a stressful situation, we'll say, to one that maybe doesn't do as great a job. I played a game called Stay, which just released this past week on Steam. And the concept is that the player turns on the game as if you're turning on a computer, if you will, which opens up like a chat app to a person named Quinn, who has just been abducted and put into a locked room. The player does not control Quinn, but instead messages him with like words of encouragement or advice on like what he should do to try and escape the room. And there's an like their element of urgency is added when the character Quinn finds a cat with a collar with a timer on it. I should know, I don't know if that always happens in every playthrough. But it seems to be, and it's something like 13 or 14 hours. So the idea is that if you don't finish this game in 14 hours, because the game tracks the time you spend away from it, something happens. I'm not sure yet. It's kind of interesting because we started playing it a bit before dinner, and then we decided to go get dinner, and in the back of my head this whole time, I'm like, oh man, I've spent some time away. I wonder if Quinn's okay. But when I, like, it was an hour of a wait time, I get back and I turn on the game and it even shows you like time spent with Quinn and time spent away. And it was like 45 minutes with Quinn, 1 hour and something away. And I was like, oof. All right. Well, I left him when he was like, you know, trying to gather his, gather his head, take a breath, etc., whatever. So he had some time to rest and he didn't really acknowledge I'd been that long, spent that much time away. So I'm not really sure if they actually take that into consideration aside from that 13 or 14 hour limit in which you have to beat the game. And another thing that comes to mind too that kind of breaks the that whole immersion is that if you get Quinn killed, which I've gotten him killed twice now, it has like a restart screen, which also lets you jump backwards in chapters. Mm. But in the process, because Quinn's dead, the timer is off at that point.
Wow.
So I purposely was looking for a way to kill Quinn off before I went to bed last night because I didn't want to play the game anymore.
Wow.
Which like that seems like bad game design, right?
True.
Or just bad friend design, Neil.
Well, I mean, so it has like a graph that shows how much Quinn trusts you and how much he, like how close he considers you, like as an acquaintance or a peer or a friend.
Neil that the point of the
appeared
game?
In the enemy
that
category.
You are the killer?
So that's what I'm thinking. I'm wondering if you, the player, is the killer.
You're like the antagonist.
But Quinn certainly, but like that's up to mystery at this point.
Right.
And Quinn certainly seems to have made multiple enemies. Maybe not enemies, that might be a strong word, but he's apparently just kind of a shitty therapist, or used to be. And then he quit, or he left his practice. So there's some clues and stuff there. Yeah. And there's definitely some promise to this game, so I'm hoping the story pays off in a better fashion, because the driving point of the game otherwise, aside from the dialogue and the choices that you can make to make him like or dislike you, is that it has puzzles in place. Mm-hmm. And maybe the closest thing I can say to the puzzles are they feel like they are just a pixel version, because I should note it's a pixel-based game in terms of appearance, are basically ripped from like other mini games from other games, or games like Zork, Return to Zork, or Myst, which it's just a bunch of different weird puzzles. Sometimes it's like a board game related puzzle. Sometimes it's one of those. It's like a miniature physical puzzle that you can have as a kid, mm-hmm. where it's a bunch of buses and you need to get your bus through mm-hmm. to the other.
So like I know the what opening. You're talking
about. But like more advanced, and it doesn't seem like any of the puzzles repeat either. So mm-hmm. it's similar to Red Strings Clubs, where like once you get past that part of the gameplay, you're basically done with that. Mm-hmm. But some of the puzzles are just really ambiguous, and they do a really poor job of telling you what you're supposed to do. So mm-hmm. much that apparently the developers on their Steam community forum have even said that we're gonna rewrite. The hints for some of these puzzles because no one's getting them, and which also led me to ask the question, like, where the fuck are the hints in this game? Because I literally don't know. Am I supposed to turn off the game and go back on, and then maybe Quinn will be like, I think I figured something out about this hint, but it seems counterintuitive to the gameplay, which is telling you if you leave the game, we're gonna keep track of that, so you probably shouldn't leave the game, and you only have 14 hours. How long is this game? I have no idea yet.
Mm. Probably about 1.5.
I think I spent like 4 hours on one playthrough. I mean, like when he gets killed, it's like you only have to go back in that same chapter and tell him not to touch the refrigerator, because that's going to shock him. Apparently, like looking at the water on the ground, he doesn't realize, wow, there's a pool of water in this refrigerator. Maybe I shouldn't touch this fridge. Oh, and the second time I get him killed, by the way, and I'm spoiling it because I don't necessarily have high hopes of what this game's going to be. The second way I got him killed, which is hilarious, by the way, because I didn't think it would kill him. He's going through like a hall of mirrors, and he often just asks for your advice. I'm like, should I do this, or like, what should I do here? And I told him in this hall of mirrors that, you know, it'd be a lot easier to get through if you just break all the mirrors. And so it cuts out of the chat room and it shows him punch the mirror a couple times, and then you can tell his hands are bloody because there's now red pixels, but then he just collapses and dies. And I'm like, what, like, is there poison like in the mirror? Is it like a mercury mirror? Like, I don't understand how.
Huh. He's got my condition where he just faints as soon as he starts bleeding profusely.
But
I'm afraid that's realistic, Neil.
But it's like, so did he die because he passed out and then wouldn't wake up in 10 hours or however much time I have left? Mm-hmm. Like, it's dumb. But I don't know. I'm still holding on to hope. I still want to finish it just because I would like to know if the game's going to make that turn into like the fourth wall breaking thing of you're actually the killer and you were a former patient or whatever the case.
That's interesting.
And also like they talk about how there's 7 different endings. It's part of like the collections you can see in the game. So I'm wondering if it's going to do that thing where the game changes what's canon or what is actually happening in each ending. So like in one ending, he's been abducted by aliens. In another ending, it's himself. In a third ending, it's you, that sort of thing. So it interests me from a narrative standpoint. But what have you guys been playing?
I'll let Scott go first.
I mean, all I did was play Gods Will Be Watching and the Red Strings Club, so that's all I got.
Oh, okay, so no Hearts of Iron 4?
Oh, that's true. I'm sorry. I played a little bit of Hearts of Iron 4 this morning. I put it on the docket just in case we needed fill some space, but in all honesty, I think we're doing pretty good on our time, so I can save Hearts of Iron for when I actually comprehend what I'm doing. Because all I can say right now is I'm doing a very accurate historical play. For anybody who hasn't heard of Hearts of Iron 4, it is a Paradox grand strategy game based around World War II. And I thought it would be easiest to play as Germany because they get a huge amount of historical advantage. And I played realistic Hitler because I didn't know what the fuck I was doing the whole time I played it. And I was like, so this is what it's like to have syphilitic insanity. Like, I don't know how to move my troops. I don't know how to put a general on them. I've gone ahead and won my fight against, like, France, and I'm really killing it on the Western Front. Wait, what's this? Poland has surrounded my capital? And then I had to quit the game. So we can talk more about Hearts of Iron 4 once I understand exactly what it is that I'm doing in that game.
Perfect. And when it comes to me and Lizzie's gaming for the week, it's been very run-of-the-mill, same old, same old.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, have you actually played anything this week?
It's been... What have we been doing?
I don't think Lizzie's actually played a video game this week.
We played Call of Duty.
We did?
Yeah.
Okay. So Lizzie's played a little Call... Oh, yeah, we did play a little bit of Call of Duty together.
Play...
It's been a watching week, basically.
It has been, yeah.
Well, I can say I turned on a couple of video games. I booted up Bloodborne for the first time yesterday. And, yep, that happened. Got killed the one time, got into the hub world, spent about 30 minutes into the hub world before I could figure out how the hell to, like, spawn back into the actual place to actually do things. Wandered around there for a little bit and had to go. I turned on Hot of a Boyfriend this morning. Get my fill of cute pigeons.
Kawaii senpai pigeons.
Yep. Turns out your character's not a pigeon.
Yeah, no, you're a human girl.
Going to a school for pigeons.
Yeah.
Yep. And I turned on Overwatch for the first time and was like, man, this game is slow and jankety, kind of.
You mean on PlayStation 4?
On PlayStation 4, yeah. It's like, okay, cool. That was gaming for the week, man. Not much. Good thing we got all this news and junk.
When you played Bloodborne, are you connected to the servers online?
Yeah.
So did you read any awesome messages as you went around the hub world?
There weren't that many awesome messages to read.
Oh, do they get filtered for the first trip in? Or
maybe.
Scott, you might know about that more. Do the messages time out over like a certain number of days or months?
In what game?
Bloodborne.
Actually, I don't think I know that. I feel like they either have to have like a random priority of appearance if there are several in the same spot, right? Because you don't have messages like on top of one another when you play the game.
Right.
But there are messages that have like so many... like thousands of like approvals that I can only imagine that they stick around, if not indefinitely, for a very, very long time. Because I can't imagine that there are like thousands of players all praising a single message in a game. Like, I didn't even learn how to praise games in Dark Souls or Bloodborne, and by learn I mean take the time to see that there was a button prompt for it until I was like halfway through Bloodborne, and that's after I had played, you know, two Dark Souls games for hundreds of hours. So they've got a timeout at some point in time, or have some other priority system in which they don't show up for more than a selected amount of players.
Oh, it just occurred to me. You probably don't have any insight yet.
Correct. Insight to what?
Isn't that the item?
Oh, the eyeball.
Yeah.
The eyeball score.
You don't have any eyeballs.
I have
no
eyeballs.
You need 20
eyeballs.
Insight, Cookie. I think you need approximately 20 insight.
Don't you just need one to activate the character improvement or level up system?
Yeah, you only need one to do that, okay. But I'm saying he needs 20 to enjoy all the spooky, horrific stuff that you get to see with a high amount of insight.
Dude, I can't wait to talk about the story for Bloodborne with you because it's so fucking weird.
Well, you might not be able to talk about the story of Bloodborne for me.
You're not going to make it?
Probably not.
It's a tough game.
I mean, I played the start of Bloodborne really, really conservatively and spent like way too much time in... is that Central Yharnam? I don't know.
Yeah, it's Lower Yharnam or something.
I think if you just play it once. Oh wait. The question is, what weapon did you pick up?
Yeah,
the cane. Okay, that's actually tougher. I feel like than the other two.
The cane is very difficult.
Yeah,
out of the three items, it is the one that is the most, I think, difficult to like restore health back with. Like it's harder to rally. And the mechanics themselves are a little wackier because the way that its two modes work are so
different,
like drastically different from one another. While the other two weapons, essentially like activating the trick mechanism of it, makes it normally have like a little bit better reach and a little bit slower attack speed. So the cane is definitely probably the most complex of the three to start with.
You basically chose hard mode.
Sweet.
You did.
Oh,
you chose the dex build.
The reason I say I probably won't finish this game is not for lack of wanting to play the game, but for lack of wanting to play the game.
You'll have to explain that just a little bit better.
Detroit Become Human.
Oh, I see.
Which comes out later this week, Friday?
Exactly. Maybe. I don't know.
Which, are we going to do videos on that? I know we're going to with John and Buck and Keith.
No, then I guess you don't need to do videos with
me. Well, if you want to do something, I'm down to. So I'm throwing that out there. But yeah, I'm looking forward to being upset with that game.
Who was it made by?
David Cage. Everyone's favorite woman or woman lover. I'm trying to think of like a
womanizer?
Bad way to put it. What's that?
He's a womanizer?
No, he's not a womanizer. He loves women. He has a history. Quantic Dreams, his studio, got sued by Ellen Page because they rendered out her full nude body. And then people, just because if it exists in the game, people can get around it. We're talking like, you know, nipples, genitalia, etc. I'm assuming on that one. I don't know about the genitalia part.
Did we get that far in Detroit? No.
Beyond.
Did we get that far in Beyond Two Souls? I know we went to the...
Well, there's never like a full frontal nudity, but it's the fact that like, why would you render it if you're not going to use it? And it was against her wishes. Like they had apparently established beforehand, but like if you render it, you're going to have it, you're going to have the assets in game, and someone's going to just fucking hack it.
Makes sense.
So and then like in more recent history, Quantic Dreams had a bunch of complaints surface or leaked or whatever through the French media, talking about not only like horrible work conditions, but also sexism in the workplace, in which David Cage then proceeded to say, "Hey, I'm friends with Ellen Page," afterwards, as like a way to like defend himself. And it's like, oh, dude, you got sued by Ellen Page. I don't know if you forgot. And every game has like a rapey scene with their female lead characters. Like, just saying, the guy's fucking weird.
Well, this one's not gonna be any different.
Well, I mean, it's just kind of like it's a horrible metaphor, but it's kind of like wanting to watch, you know, a car crash happen. You know, it's like, we know it's probably gonna be bad, and maybe it won't be. Maybe it'll be a little more Heavy Rain than Beyond Two Souls. I don't know. It's like all of his games have like some coolness to them. But once you get past the initial, like the initial coolness, then you start to realize like what else is going around. And I think we've talked about all of the games in some form, like Indigo Prophecy has the whole start where you play as a character that just murders someone out of his control for some reason, and you have to hide the evidence. And then immediately after you get done with that character, you play as the detectives investigating the murder. Oh, so that's kind of cool, right?
Yeah.
And then Heavy Rain itself is actually pretty cool. The idea of like a serial killer, I mean, cool within the sense of a game and fiction, a serial killer kidnaps your son and you have to go through all these like Saw-like trials to save him. It's like, that's a cool concept. It's just there's David Cage problems.
I was about to say, I've only played Indigo Prophecy and part of Beyond Two Souls.
Yeah.
Which one was that one?
That was the one where it had the two-player mode, but one person was literally a ghost the entire time. You were the little girl. Mm. You started off as a little girl with the ghost that could throw things across the walls, mm-hmm. and there was the scene with the desert and the peyote.
I also forgot about the weird thing that David Cage did when he was like presenting this idea to Ellen Page. He literally came up with a photo album of a bunch of pictures of Ellen Page as a little girl. It's like... Like, where did you get these photos, David?
Yeah, that is creepy.
He's a creepy guy.
Well, I'm not going to judge David Page on his game. Well, I'm not going to judge David Page's game for David Page.
David Cage?
I don't
David
care.
David Cage.
They're one of the same now. Page.
David, oh, we'll just have to Ellen see Page, how it is. Cage.
So that's coming out.
Yeah.
And maybe, like... happier news. Recently at a preview event for Kingdom Hearts 3, journalists were able to put their hands on the games for the first time, at least on the record. Director Tetsuya Nomura, was reportedly telling members of the press that they had big plans for a release date reveal next month or in coming weeks, which happens to be about the same time E3 is being held. Now, hold up. Hold on. I know you might be like totally excited that this game's coming out soon, et cetera, but this hasn't been confirmed by Square Enix yet. And as of this recording, but luckily for us, we have Cookie, who is our Kingdom Hearts 3 existential expert. Does Kingdom Hearts 3 exist, Cookie?
I'm going to say it's in utero now. Not sure if it's going to be a full miscarriage. But I'm going to say we've got a couple of cells. People have played the game. Max has played the game. I accept this as, hey, there's at least two stages worth of, there's at least 40 minutes of content of
Wait,
this game.
Max is in Maximilian, the, okay.
Yeah, Maximilian dude, the fighting game guy. He has played this game and his wife has played this game. They got into an event. I was watching a video on it earlier. So, yes, I say this game has some cells that exist. Whether or not this game is coming out in 2018, I got nothing for that, honestly. I'm not getting my hopes up that much.
This decade?
I'm going to give it before 2020. Fingers crossed.
I mean, they basically have the whole game confirmed at this point, like the 10 areas. That's going to take place, and I'm not going to name them off because I don't remember half of them.
One of them is the Toy Story.
Monsters, Inc. would be a second one.
Yeah.
They're revisiting some of the Kingdom Hearts 2 locations as well, which encompasses like three or four of them. I don't know Kingdom Hearts, so I can't name them off.
I know they've got Olympus, Toy Story, Traverse Town.
What about Wreck-It Ralph?
I think he's just a summon. I don't know. I haven't looked at like any kind of full list. I've kind of been on like a blackout because it hasn't mattered.
He's just a summon. It's like, yeah, Shiva's been confirmed, but Wreck-It Ralph, man, oh yeah, he's back in it. No. I don't know. Summon.
Yeah, Max did say something kind of unsettling, though. He asked about, like, from what we've seen, it's been very Disney. He asked about, where's the Final Fantasy? And they're like, we can't say anything yet. So, yeah.
Why do you think that is?
Because they want to surprise everybody, probably, or there's not going to be as much Final Fantasy as we want. Mm. But either way, the game's in utero. We've got a couple of cells. it exists for now.
Well, you bring up Final Fantasy. We're not going to talk about this to any extent, but I saw the character model for Locke for Final Fantasy or Dissidia NT. Locke Cole, the thief from Final Fantasy VI, looks fucking great. Makes me like real.
Makes you want to play Dissidia?
Not really. It just makes me real anxious about the possibility of like a Final Fantasy VI remake happening ever.
No,
but yeah, it's probably not.
I was about to say, you know how much Final Fantasy VII remake is going to happen?
Yeah, Nobuo Uematsu just got confirmed to be working on the project too, and they said it probably wouldn't be out until 2020. So that means like 2021, 2022.
2025, 2027.
Yeah. Be close to. I'll be like 37 then. It's crazy. 38. Oh, man, that's depressing. Moving on to other news that's not so depressing. I'm jumping around on the topics here in case you guys are trying to follow around.
Shenmue 3 got delayed.
Well, okay, let's get through the shit news first. Yeah, Shenmue 3 got delayed into 2019.
You said not depressing.
Big surprise.
I'm going to go ahead and add a snapshot of my face here about my surprise at that. Into the Discord, just so you guys can kind of have an idea on how I'm feeling. For our listeners, since this is not a visual medium in any way, I took a screenshot of, is the main character's name Ryo?
Yeah, Ryo.
Yeah, I took a screenshot of one of Ryo's many single expressions in the Shenmue 3 trailers. which, I mean, it does express about every emotion I think face possibly could. He looks angry, confused, surprised, constipated.
Looks like a statue.
Mm-hmm. I can't get enough of how bad the faces are for this game.
This is one of the more animated faces, too.
This is good news for you, Neil. The longer that they delay this game, the more time they actually have to improve it. So you can, you know, hold on to that hope.
Aside from that, and other small time news, apparently Sony Interactive Entertainment has claimed that they will no longer manufacture new PlayStation Vita games, physical games. Mm. And immediately after that, Sony Japan made its own statement saying that they would continue production of the cartridges. Mm-hmm. So is the Vita dead yet?
I did love your favorite comment on that thread.
Yes, the comment we found, and this is off of nichegamer.com, which is a site that has a lot of interesting games and so forth that don't usually hit the major media outlets, was, who are you trying to fool, Sony? You haven't made a Vita game yourself in years. It's very true.
So, no, the Vita is not dead, unfortunately, because someone out there is still making things for it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Had to get Galgen 2 on there.
Hopefully it will just die. But I think it's going to be officially no longer bothering me in 2019. Is that when they said they were going to stop doing the PlayStation Plus games? So at that point, they're freeing up more money for PlayStation Plus games for the PS4.
Right. Have they stopped doing PlayStation 3 games yet?
No. Because why would they? I think we got King Oddball last month, or this month, which is just a straight Android app.
And then the last bit of news I've brought to the table is that GameStop's latest CEO, Michael Mauler, is stepping down. He had only been in that position for 3 months, and the move appeared to be effective immediately, which is usually a bad sign.
Oh.
Because they moved an interim CEO in at the time of announcement. Yeah. Just saying, who calls bankruptcy from GameStop, in 2019? Anyone willing to make that wager?
A lot of places have been going bankrupt lately.
I mean, it's
2020.
It's kind of related, but Toys R Us, of course.
Mm-hmm, right.
2020.
Yeah, I'm a gambler. I'll also hop on that bet. So, Neil, are you taking, you're taking They Hold Up, or are you betting on 2019?
Oh, I'm not making any wager here.
You're not making any bets. Okay, and Cookies sank by 2020, they're out.
2020, I got the chapter 5 in 2020.
Okay, so I'm gonna take the riskiest bet, and I'm gonna say I believe in GameStop. They're gonna make it through this just fine. let's see. So you said you're all done with your news, Neil?
Yeah, so
some quick tidbits that I wanted to throw in there. Mario Ace's demo is out on the 24th, which hopefully this podcast releases before then to give you a heads up. I'll be playing it, and they should, I think they have a tournament then coming up for Mario Ace's in June 1st through the 3rd. So you'll have about a week to pick up the game and then hop online for a pre-launch tournament, which should be really fun. And then otherwise, I don't know if you guys got to check out the link I sent you about the Xbox making a modular, handy-capable controller. But for anybody who is interested in modular controllers in general for an Xbox or a PC setup, this is really fascinating news. And for gamers who need a controller that isn't the like standard controller model, this is going to be, I think, a really, really cool and like desperately needed implementation for gamers who can't handle those controllers that mm-hmm. easily.
Yeah, I think it's awesome.
Yeah, it's really neat to see their video just demonstrating all the different ways that you can obviously modify it for accessibility is really, really impressive. And it's really cool to see that gaming is becoming more accessible through controllers like this.
Mm-hmm. And it also presents like a more accessible way to use alternative controls for specifically PC gamers, because
yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
Something like this has been possible before, but we're talking about it being a much less official, we'll say, solution. And
well, this is a more official solution.
No, right, right. Mm-hmm. What I said was, in the past, it's been a much, much less okay. official solution. And we're talking about yeah. things like modifying a keyboard or taking apart a keyboard to basically make your own contacts.
This makes it a lot more accessible for yeah. people, both in the actual like physical manipulation of it, but in the availability and compatibility of mm-hmm. all of the components and accessories.
Now, Lizzie, when we watched the video earlier, you brought up an interesting question, which was, do you think anyone would ever basically become hot-headed over the idea of cheating, quote unquote, with one of these controllers mm-hmm. or modular controllers?
I'm just very, I guess I'm cynical, and I see what, you know, the worst thing that people could say about it is that, oh, well, they get a leg up, blah, 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 because they don't have a regular controller, whatever, like, so dumb.
That was a bad, this is a bad turn of yeah. phrase.
Well, it's what they would say. I'm not saying I would say that.
No, right. Just the leg up. Like if yeah. someone's using their foot to control something.
Oh. Yeah. Well, yeah, I guess that was bad. But no, I'm just saying that I think some people, if they're competitive, might be like, oh, well, it's not fair, blah, blah, blah. But I think overall, I think it's a good thing. It's because it's fair to the people that, you know, can't use a regular controller.
Yeah, I think it's probably going to be at least a very small percentage of people who have that criticism. And, you know, there's nothing stopping you from buying your own modular controller and using that to give yourself an advantage if you feel like that's really that big of a deal.
Mm-hmm. Right. Do you think no. people would?
No.
I mean, those controllers, I think, are just cool and interesting in general, but I can't speak for what other people will do in order to win at games,
true.
You know, or feel like they have an advantage or genuinely get an advantage.
The question
I'm sure that there will be people who do that.
Purely from the fact that, like, what what alternative like modes of control is going to be better than
mouse and
keyboard?
Superior. Yeah. Yeah, that is true.
Well, I do know that it's going to make, there's this one YouTuber who likes to beat video games using odd controllers. It's probably going to make his life a lot easier.
The fishing rod and the DK bongos, Dark Souls playthroughs, like, this is only going to make it better.
Yeah.
I can now turn this banana into a trigger every time I touch the banana.
I don't know. I think it's awesome. I'm just worried some people will be negative.
Yeah. I mean, it's like an interesting... I would say that those arguments would usually have to come from like a place of competitive gaming, right? Mm-hmm.
But I think most competitive gaming nowadays is going to be very not toxic. At least the communities of competitive gaming try to stay as untoxic as possible. The only competitive gaming I watch is the fighting community. They're very not toxic and very good about, they're toxic in ways, but they're very good about like, hey, this is the controller that you're going to be using. We're not going to stop you.
Yeah. I mean, the fighting community has like that special characteristic where like they trash talk a lot, but if you're part of the community, like you're always welcomed and so forth. And the trash talk is like part of the spirit of the game.
Mm-hmm. No, we're not talking League of Legends. Those guys are worse than Call of Duty players.
Well, I mean, we could even say that like Overwatch still probably has one of the worst communities at this point when it comes to sportsmanship, we'll say. But so like from the scope of competitive gaming, I mean, they've already started like to talk about things like should certain prescriptions or drugs be illegal for players to use, like things that would potentially give you an edge,
like Adderall.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. And like in the Olympics, the last Winter Olympics or Summer Olympics, wasn't there a runner from South Africa that was using like, again, I apologize. I don't know like the most PC terms for some of these things, but is an amputee below his shins. So he has like, he had these titanium blades.
The prosthetics.
Yeah.
Wait,
exactly.
Are they still talking about Tink?
Is that his name?
No.
Wait, what?
That's what the black community calls him, basically.
Oh my gosh.
It's poor
really?
Little Tink Tink. Cause like, he didn't have any legs, and when he's running, he's Tink.
I mean,
but they're like, he's quick.
Yeah,
he's
yeah.
good. And it's like, why are people discriminating against him? It's like, how else is he supposed to?
Right.
Right.
But like the whole question of whether or not that actually gives him an edge. Like if he had normal human shins and feet, like would he be doing worse?
But see, that's exactly what I was saying. People turned him, you know, they said that about him, you know, so that's why I think that they would say that about the new controller. You know, because it's like, really, you're going to say that? And then, you know, but.
So like as competitive gaming as a whole, like grows and becomes more like institutionalized and uniformed, I'm sure we'll potentially run into something that we would not be aware of. Like, oh, once they get the ability to, or I mean, like.
Once they get the ability to vote.
No. Like, once they get the ability to control something with your head as opposed to your fingers, like, is that going to be illegal? Or by that point, would the technology be embraced so much? Now, that's, you know, potentially centuries off from where we're at now.
By that time, we're just going to be in nerve gears and it's going to be fine.
Yeah, exactly. Except for the point when we all get locked into Sword Art Online. And or whatever the fuck the game's actually called.
I think we're all going to be dead.
That's
sorry,
bleak.
Cynical.
That's bleak. But yeah, that's interesting. But overall, like that's awesome. That's amazing. It gives me hope that like I'll be able to continue playing games into like my the later stages of my life after whatever debilitating things could happen to me
after you go blind.
Anything that makes the gaming community more inclusive is to definitely be celebrated. I am like super thrilled about it.
Yeah.
I've like asked myself if I would be more terrified of going deaf or going blind, and it's like a real hard question for me.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah. You don't listen to music anymore.
Kitty loves music. I think he'd rather be blind.
Yeah, I would maybe.
Yeah, I can still play a music instrument blind.
Right.
Absolutely. I think there's a lot of interesting territory to explore, like in an auditory sense, if you were to lose your vision. But at the same time, it's like it's an immense handicap to not be able to see the world around you. So
I know. It's
who knows? We can save this would you rather for the next episode.
Yeah.
Comment and like and subscribe below, and don't be afraid to tell us whether or not you'd rather be blind or deaf.
Mm-hmm. Or tell us whether you'd like Cookie to be blind or deaf.
And I totally did not mean to offend anybody.
No, I
did you offend? Thing. Did you offend someone? I think I said the most offensive thing.
All right, yeah, before go ahead.
We're all trying to come from a positive place here, and I think we're all excited about this in a positive sense.
Mm-hmm.
You were just trying to give a counter argument that like shitty people are going to use potentially.
Right. Yeah.
So before we wrap it up, Half-Life 3, it's happening, Cookie? Yes, no, maybe so?
At this point, yeah.
There's some musings going on from Valve saying that they're teasing that something's coming up.
Wait, is Valve actually teasing something?
Yes, Valve is actually the one teasing things at this point.
Oh, sweet. So yeah, no, Valve figured, I guess... Oh yeah, Kingdom Hearts 3 exists. We might as well make Half-Life 3 exist too. Their third installment can't come out before ours.
Time to start work on it.
I'm putting my money on new Team Fortress 2 hats.
Oh god, yeah, that'd be awesome.
What? Okay. That just spurred a whole new idea. What if their whole teaser is not actually Half-Life 3, but instead
something
Team
else?
Fortress Battle Royale?
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, totally.
I can work
I'm
with
actually
this.
I'll bet the field against Half-Life 3 announcement. So
are you taking Half-Life 3 then, Cookie?
Wait, why am I taking the sucker bet?
Because I took the other sucker buy earlier.
Touché.
We gotta like even it out here. We need a balance.
Okay, so I am going for a Half-Life 3 teaser announcement post E3. We're going Tokyo Game Show.
Okay, they're not going to show like Tokyo Game Show.
That's what you think.
If they show anything, the likelihood is that it's going to just be a title screen, and that's going to be it. It's going to be like Metroid Prime 4.
Yeah, Tokyo Game Show.
It. Yeah, it's not going to be a Tokyo Game
Tokyo
Show.
Tokyo Game Show.
Well,
if you have your own opinions about Half-Life 3 and whether or not it will exist, you can write in at podcast@fancyramen.com.
Don't be afraid to slap that like button and subscribe to the Fancy Ramen Podcast. You can do this on YouTube.
And speaking of slapping that like button, make sure you slap your friend and tell him, hey, listen up. You should listen to the Fancy Ramen Podcast.
I'm Neil.
I'm Cookie.
Come on, Lizzie.
I thought I'd last.
Oh, have we decided on this?
No, I think it was
you
usually...
always told me to go last.
No, it's
all right.
Scott
I'm
last.
Scott. That was Lizzie. You lost your chance. We'll see you next time, guys.
Bye.